Tom Brady finally checked it in for God. You kind of believe him, don't you?
I believe him. No, this time this has the ring of truth. Yes.
Yeah, it sounds. Now, 1 year ago he retired again. I saw, but the I think this sounds real. And goodness gracious, guys, we've talked about this at 45. I was just comparing. I went back, Craig, and you know, because I was around Marino. I mean, I was actually at Marino's last high school game and last NFL game.
Yeah, that's crazy.
At Pitt, but I mean, Marino was 38. See, his last year at Miami, and you know, and now Danny had blown that Achilles tendon and had to wear a brace and all that kind of stuff. But it's still at 38, he still had his moments. Again, he threw for almost 400 yards. We came back and beat Indy up there, and Danny threw for almost 400 yards. You know,
but could you see him playing seven more years?
No. No, that's the thing about it. When I look at, I mean, and he was ready to go. You know, Minnesota offered him a deal. We thought he might, we thought he might do it. You know,
I had forgotten about that, Pat. I until you said that, I had totally forgotten that Vikings had shown some interest in him.
Well, we were going, I've told you, I think, you know, Jimmy knew that Johnson, that if that franchise was going to get on down the road, long term, you needed to do it without Danny. Now that's hard, and Jimmy didn't want to live with that, so he left and let Dave do it. You know, I mean, so we were not going to. You know, his contract was up and all that, and all. We thought he might do the deal at Minnesota. Now we, you know, glad that he didn't. But again, looking at Marino at 38, thinking what you just said, Craig. I mean, he couldn't have done this seven more years or six. I mean, it was really, and you felt sorry for him that last game. You know, you heard me talk about this. We go up there to Jacksonville in the second round of the playoffs, and they beat us 62-7. I mean, beat our brains out. And, you know, and you felt sorry for Danny. I did, having been around him forever and ever since Central Catholic in Pittsburgh and all. But I can't fathom, and that was at 38. So, you know, that compared with 45 for Brady to make it this long and to still play at a reasonably competitive stage, it just blows me away, you know. Hopefully he doesn't try to do it again. You know, and I was, you know, you're reading the stuff coming out of Tampa about, you know, how they felt bad for him because he was going through the divorce and all this. And, you know, he's obviously got, you know, his life has changed and all these kinds of things. But goodness, you hate to see one of these guys out there that's an iconic guy and then just, you know, and get blown up at the end. That's tough to watch.
Yeah, so I guess it was what, Matt? Video on Twitter is how
Twitter or Instagram,
it.
What one of them, yeah, something like that.
Well, he was on the beach, right, when he was.
Yeah, he's on the beach, so. Yeah, on the beach and said, I won't be long-winded. He says, mm-hmm. I know the process was a pretty big deal last time, so when I woke up this morning, I figured I'd just press record and let you guys know first. He goes, I won't be long-winded. He goes, you only get one super emotional retirement essay, and I used mine up last year. So, really, thank you guys so much to every single one of you for supporting me. And that was it. You know, he said, my family, my friends, my teammates, my competitors, I could go on forever. There's too many. So he said, thank you guys for allowing me to live my absolute dream. He said, I wouldn't change a thing. Love you all. And that was it. So seven-time Super Bowl winner Pat, all-time leader in passing yards, all-time leader in touchdown passes, three-time MVP. This year, he threw for 4,694 yards. I mean, the fourth most in the NFL, 25 touchdowns this last year. Now, it wasn't his greatest year. The team wasn't the greatest. I mean, it, you know, had a losing record regular season, did win their division, but at least he has his health, right, Pat?
I mean, you know, that's the thing about it. You know, even going back to the Marino deal, I mean, Danny had his moments at 38. You know, and he was the first guy to throw for 60,000 yards. And like I say, he did some really impressive things, but, you know, you could just see Father Time was winning that one. And it looks that way to me with Brady now, you know. Of course, I can remember when Drew Bledsoe got hurt and they started playing him. And we're trying to figure out, okay, now, who is this gangly guy down there? What's he all about? You know, and the thing that that you did notice about him once they started playing him, you know, was that the ball did explode out of his hand very, very quickly. You know, it did. Now, he was never a threat to run, obviously. You know, so whether you put him into the, you know, Joe Montana, Staubach family in that regard. That's a different deal because of his skill level. But as far as a tall guy who was smart and knew what he was doing and the ball jumped out of his hand, he's a real McCoy.
All right, Pat, the other big story yesterday was the release of the Big 12 football schedule. What are your thoughts there?
Oh, gosh, I told Matt, and I kind of feel like a schmuck, but I have before, but I can't get excited about Central Florida, Houston, BYU, and Cincy. Now, you ain't got any choice. I mean, you're going to – it's there. You know, and I was making jokes yesterday about, you know, younger, hipper, and cooler. So maybe we can just kind of yuck it up our way out of this thing or something. I don't, you know, you ain't got any choice, but I was looking at, you know, you look down here, and Matt and I were talking about off the air. I mean, if you had a choice, I'm not going to swap those four for Nebraska, Colorado, A&M, and Missouri.
No.
I mean, you're not going, you know, and it's.
Now, Brigham Young might be a little intriguing.
Yeah, they are. I think they are. Brigham Young historically is interesting. You know, and
but
the whole
what we've given up are the traditional rivalries and, you know, Nebraska and Colorado and all that. Of course, I will readily admit, I have a soft spot in my heart for Colorado just because I've seen, and I know Pat has too. I've seen what Colorado can be, so maybe I might overvalue Colorado compared to others. But there's so much history there is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you know, and it's a unique place, you know. It seemed like going to Boulder was a different deal than going about any other place in the league. And you know, they had their moments both ways, you know, good and the other way.
Oh, yeah, definitely so. Yes.
But still, you know, and then you get to, you know, A&M comes in the league, and Missouri, I can remember visiting with Don Faroe up there, and, you know, when Warren Powers and Phil Bradley and all those guys, and God, they had good football teams, and it was a neat place to go, and, you know, that hillside with the rocks and everything, and Nebraska speaks for itself. I mean, they can't beat Little Ned now, but still, it's Nebraska, you know, and all that kind of thing. So, you know, I've never really had any personal experience with Central Florida. I mean, it's kind of a commuter school down there. Houston, Houston is unique because, again, I can remember I was at SMU when they came into the Southwest Conference, and, you know, they won it in what, the first and the third year, you know, and I mean, and,
yeah.
But when you were playing in the Astrodome, you could go down there and people could sit about wherever they wanted to. They can't draw flies, and they still don't. Now, they built a nice smaller stadium out there, which I've never been in. I've heard it's nice for that size and everything. I mean, they're going to be competitive as far as the product on the field. You know, but again, you're just dealing with some other things. I've been, you know, we went up there and played Cincinnati in 1983, and they've done some nice things and all this. But, you know, golly, that doesn't – and it's, you know, Central Florida, Houston, and Cincy are going to bring nobody to the road games.
Well, you just said it, Pat. Smaller stadiums. Why are the stadiums smaller? Because there's not as many fans. There's not as much interest as at Nebraska or an A&M.
You.
I mean,
yeah,
it's
so – you know,
it's simple mathematics. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, and I tend to laugh about younger, hipper, cooler, but and I'm not to the point of thinking this league has kind of become a AAA league. But you know, it's a step down. I can't get excited about it. I look at you. Go ahead, man.
I was going to ask you this, Pat. What I said last hour, and see if you agree or disagree, because you have a different perspective than, you know, I do. Is it important for Oklahoma State to play more games in the state of Texas? That was noticeable to me yesterday.
Well,
you know, they only play one team. Now, it is down there in Houston.
Yeah.
Just because that's where OSU majors in recruiting, and they should do that. Is it important publicity-wise for OSU to be in the state of Texas more?
It helps a little, but it's – I mean, they, you know, we always used to recruit there before when it was Big 8 Southwest Conference.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, they're, because you border the, you know, geographically, you border the state of Texas. So, you know, when a kid can, you can hop on Southwest or drive from Dallas, and they're going to recruit down there anyway.
Okay.
I don't think it's, that did
as
not jump at me.
But
it did jump at me again when I look at the schedule, you know, and they're not playing Baylor, TCU, Tech, or Texas.
Yeah. Right.
That, now, not for the reason you said, but it just popped out at me that, you know, that was the reason of the merger, to get these geographic rivalries going here and the whole thing. And goodness, I mean, But you know, no, I don't think it's. Yeah, I don't think they'll have a presence down there anyway.
Well, and also every game's on TV nowadays, whereas 40 years ago. You might be on TV once or twice a year, and so it's probably a bigger deal back then.
And you don't have to drive, you know, 100 hours to get there or something like that. So they're, you know, Houston's a little bit of a pull, but still you can pop on Southwest Airlines and be in Tulsa or Oklahoma City pretty quickly.
But it was a shock to the system when I looked at OSU's schedule yesterday. And other than Oklahoma in there, their last four games of the year are against the four new teams. I mean, look, it is what it is. I'm not saying it's necessarily negative or whatever. I'm just saying until we knew this was coming. But until I saw it on paper yesterday, it just hadn't set in with me yet that we're living in a different world now, you know?
Well, yeah, no, we are, and you're right. When you see it in print, I'm the same way. I mean, I ain't really dug it from the start, but there's nothing you can do about it. But from the standpoint of, you know, I'm looking at their schedule just like you are. You know, and from October the 29th, with the exception of OU on November the 4th, you know.
They play a bunch of strangers.
I mean, Cincinnati, Central Florida, Houston, BYU. I'm thinking, wait a minute now. I mean, these are all non-league games. But no, they're not anymore.
Competition-wise, Pat, what stands out to me outside, I mean, we've talked about OU and OSU schedule, which I think both of them did benefit OSU, maybe even more than OU, not playing Texas, TCU, Baylor, or Tech. OU doesn't have to play K-State or Baylor or Tech. I mean, Tech did beat them last year. Houston's the other one that OU doesn't play. But like to compare Iowa State and Baylor, Pat. So Iowa State, their four games that they don't play are UCF, Tech, West Virginia, and Houston, all right? Which all four, though, I mean, you just figure, just looking at it, maybe they're all four in the bottom half. Well, okay, so that's who Iowa State doesn't play, so they play everyone else. OSU, OU, TCU, I mean, just go down the list. Baylor, BYU, Texas, K-State. All right, then Baylor, you look at, Baylor does not play OU, OSU, Iowa State or BYU. That's a pretty nice schedule for Baylor.
Well, yeah, but now going forward, guys, those ADs got to sell tickets, and those people that buy suites and pay the premium prices, you think they're going to be excited about Central Florida and Cincinnati and them coming to anywhere around here?
I wonder.
Now, Texas and obviously Texas and OU will bring people. Wherever they play, they're going to bring people. The rest of these guys aren't. BYU might simply because of the Mormon stuff. But from the standpoint of these other guys aren't going to bring anybody.
I wonder if TCU, Tech, and Baylor and Houston will play the majority of the Texas teams most every year. Like, I wonder, it's hard. Maybe it will be this way, guys. I don't know. But it's hard for me to imagine a year where Baylor or Tech or someone like that would miss three or four other Texas teams. You know, I got to think they're going to be playing them. Well, but it's not OU and Texas. I agree with you, Pat. I agree with you on that standpoint.
But still, then you revert back to, you know, because I would never have believed the Southwest Conference would have split up. I mean, back in the 70s and somebody told me there's never going to be a Southwest Conference, I'd say you're crazy as hell. There's always going to be a Southwest Conference.
Sure.
And it'll be Arkansas and the Texas schools. And you'll have great competition. You know, which it was. I mean, and it was unique and all this kind of stuff. But that thing blew all up and everything. I don't know. I hate to view this. I'll say it. I mean, does that make this league going forward, when you take out Texas and OU, does the Big 12, does it get to be closer to the American Conference or the SEC?
It's firmly in between. It's not the SEC.
It looks more like the American.
Yes,
to answer that question.
I mean, it does.
And
you hate to say that.
No. I mean, that pains me to say that. I don't like saying it.
Well, Tram said, OSU has played at least two road games in Texas for 27 straight years. And he also said it appears the Big 12 didn't honor OSU's request to be treated as a Southwest school. Now, we'll see. Like we said, Pat, this is with OU in Texas, this might be a one-year deal or 2 years at the most, right?
Yeah, so. When they get gone, and I would bet it'd be one more year, but, you know, the whole deal and all that. I hate to sound negative about this thing, but there's not anything that excites me about this. They're really not. I feel bad about saying it that way. I wish I could feel otherwise, and maybe I don't know. It doesn't light my fire, to be honest.
So, like Matt said, when you look at that OSU schedule and you finish off the year, to finish off November with at Central Florida, at Houston, BYU. It's not the same ring as, like you said, Oklahoma, Nebraska.
I think especially A&M, when the uniqueness goes away, when this becomes commonplace, I think even more so. Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, look,
I know it.
It sounds bad, but the facts are the facts, guys. I mean,
Cincinnati made the Final Four a year ago. I've been up there. We went up there in '83 and played them, and they'd beaten Penn State the week before when Watson Brown had them up there. They had a good football team. But I remember sitting on a 2x4 in the press box, too, calling defenses. and hell, it's probably still there. It might still be there, Well, what you're dealing with.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Elway, Franco Harris, Thurman Thomas. Then you're into, they all got four. Terrell Davis, James White got three. Now there's a whole bunch of guys got two. Whole list of a whole bunch of guys. But again, Emmitt's one with five. Then you got Elway, Franco Harris, and Thurman Thomas with four. Good job, guys. Appreciate
good
everybody
job,
calling in.
Caller number six, Tommy. I mean, and a lot of the callers helped, and if they weren't right, I mean, they had guys who were up on the list.
Oh, so. Yeah, sure they were.
Anyway,
yeah.
Good job by the callers today. Tommy, our winner in Jonesing for Johnny's. All right, Pat, we had a blockbuster trade yesterday involving a coach. Yeah. Denver Broncos agreeing to a trade with the New Orleans Saints, makes Sean Payton the 19th head coach in that franchise's history. So, the Broncos are giving up a 2023 first-round pick, number 29 overall, and a 2024 second-round pick. Now, they do get back the Saints' 2024 third-round pick. But what are your thoughts, Pat?
Well, it looks like to me with this new ownership group, it's just the Walton group and others. Obviously, they've got very deep pockets. I guess they're going to pay Payton somewhere, from what I read, between 20 and 17 mil. Not sure where that'll put him.
Wow.
Right up to the top. Oh, yeah.
You're talking a year?
Yeah. Yeah, a year. Yeah, per year.
That's
not
crazy.
Yeah, not for length of contract, per year. But anyway, you think about it, Craig. If you, their big investment, obviously, was getting Russell Wilson. And they gave up a ton to get Wilson. If Wilson should have a couple of more years left, so you go the most viable, guy, I guess, would be Sean Payton as far as what he did with Breeze. He's won a world title. He's a Parcells guy. He's got all kind of credibility. Obviously, he was still under contract with New Orleans, but the deal you talked about is the compensation to let him get out. So, essentially, the way I see it is the new ownership group did everything that they could possibly do to get Russell Wilson going. And that's what they got to do. It's a solid franchise. It was before, in the whole deal. Gosh, I've heard them talk about building another new stadium out there, someplace south of Denver. But anyway.
That's crazy.
I know it, because the one they're in, it's fairly new.
Yeah, I was in the old Mile High when I went to that playoff game against Cleveland in the late 80s. But Payton, 152 and 89, 15 years as the Saints head coach. Included the win over the Colts in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Didn't coach this year, was an analyst for Fox Sports. And of course, the deal is he had signed the extension with the Saints in 2019 that was set to run through the 24 season. And so that's why the Broncos had to negotiate compensation for Denver to be able to sign him as their head coach. So, well, Yeah.
And I've told y'all, you know, George Payton, that GM out there at Denver, was with us at Miami. He was a Rick Spielman guy. Rick had come in there as the GM, and George was kind of a entry-level personnel guy and really a good guy. I mean, he's not a – my remembrance of him was not an overbearing personality, Craig. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, mm-hmm. he's not going to try to, you know, have a fight about authority at every step of the way. With Payton, they'll work together on certain things, and I'm sure that had to be, you know, part of this agreement, whatever it is. But no, if you got deep pockets, which the Walton clan certainly does, and you know, as far as paying him, and then you know, getting out of the deal draft wise, and you've got Russell Wilson, you gave up a lot to get him, and all this kind of stuff. So you know, they had already acquired a first-round pick from Miami in a trade when they got into Bradley Chubb to Miami in November. So, you know, they're not out of picks. You know,
gave up a lot, though. Yeah, I mean, they gave five draft picks, sure, including two first-rounders, two second-rounders, mm-hmm. as well as three players to get Wilson.
Sure.
They signed him to a five-year, $245 million contract extension before the start of the season. And this last year, by any measure, was a disaster. Oh, yeah. They end up firing Hackett, but they were last in the league in scoring at under 17 points a game, last in the league in third down conversions. They scored 16 or fewer points 11 times, but they lost 9 games by 7 or fewer points. So that means that defense, I mean, that they had the number one scoring defense at one point this season, but the number 32 scoring offense, Pat.
So they've got a credible roster in that. I mean, it's not like you got to try to rebuild the whole thing. I mean, with like you say, Craig, with everything they invested in Russell Wilson, the key is to get him going.
Yeah.
You know, you got probably 2 to 4 years left with him, age-wise. You know, what's he, 32 or something? But from the standpoint of, and so Sean Payton, I don't blame him for doing it. It's you know, now you combine with, should they have given that much to get Russell Wilson? I don't know, but you got him. So you better try to get him straightened out and get him going. And that's it. That's exactly right. You know, do that. Now, along these lines, now, this is interesting. Did you know, the Jets hired Nathaniel Hackett, who had been, you know, the head coach there before. They mm-hmm. hired him as the offensive coordinator. Well, he was the coordinator for Aaron Rodgers.
Right. They had a great relationship.
Green Bay. Did you see Rodgers' remarks about him this morning, Craig?
What did he say?
He's my guy. Oh, he was talking about how he loved working with him, loved the family, got close to them all, and kept on referring to him as my guy and everything. So I'll be really surprised if Aaron Rodgers doesn't end up J-E-T-S.
Yeah.
You know, I really do.
It's looking like it's done in Green Bay. It's just a matter of where he's going. And like you said, that's with Hackett being there, connect the dots and so forth. Real quick, before we take a timeout, Pat, what are your thoughts on the Texans hiring D'Amico Ryans as their new head coach? Of course, he was the defensive coordinator with the 49ers.
Well, ironically, now they're so fouled up internally. You know, McNair, the death of the owner and his family taking over, and then you had some of these yahoos from New England that came in and didn't have any experience at running things, and that got all crazy. I don't know, Casario, the GM, is still out of that group, and I don't know what he's all about. But, Rimes had been there and had been a good player before. Goodness. I did read this morning, and I don't like injecting this into radio shows, but they're the first franchise to hire 3 African-American head football coaches.
I was going
to
say, as screwed up as they have ran that organization, at least they are – they're giving
in that
African-Americans a chance. So I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, right.
Well,
I thought
in Culley before him.
I know Culley and Lovey both. I thought they should have stayed with Culley before, you know, and all, but whatever. And as far as I don't know, you know, Rimes has been the defensive coordinator out there, was a good player for him.
We'll see. Who knows?
Well, I wish I knew him. I really don't know much about him.
Yeah, right.
You know, they got it going pretty good San Francisco defensively. And
10-year
obviously
career
the guys,
as a player, Texans and Eagles, second-round pick out of Alabama by the Texans back in 2006, was defensive rookie of the year, you know.
Oh, he's
second
a good
in the
player.
League in tackles. I mean, he was a good player.
He was a good player, so he'll bring credibility. some credibility to them. Been there, done that. It's not like he needs a roadmap to get around Houston, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's got to fix that defense because, know, 30th, they've got to fix that. The offense was 30th, averaged 17 points.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of things. There's a bunch of things.
19 interceptions, second most interceptions. Davis Mills, their opening day starter, had 15 of those interceptions, 15 games, tied for the league high. You know, Kyle Allen came in when Mills got benched and threw 4 interceptions in 2 games and so forth. So, well, and they also had the league's worst rush defense. They gave up 170 yards a game on the ground.
Oh, they've had a lot of things going on down there, to say the least.
No team had allowed that much since the 0-16 Lions back in 2008. So, and finished 27th in points allowed per game three seasons in a row. So, yeah, a lot of work to do there in Houston.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.
CBSSportsLine.com. But Urban Meyer talking about the best coaching jobs in college football, Pat.
Yeah, you know, it's on some podcast and everything, and it's he's making the point that he doesn't want to coach anymore. Whether that's true or not, who knows? But it was interesting, and we've talked about these sorts of things over the years. See, he had in the order he had it was Georgia, Ohio State, tie between Florida State, then LSU and USC. He also threw Texas and Alabama in there. Now, his theory was he was using, which, I've heard, we've all talked about this before, draw a 300-mile radius around the school and see how many people that you're, as far as guys that can really play, you're close to, sort of thing. I probably personally, and again, we've played this game before, Matt, we've talked about this before, and I think you've heard Coach Switzer say the same thing. I still think Texas should be the best job in the country. I had Texas 1, Ohio State 2, Alabama 3, Penn State 4, Notre Dame 5. Now, I drew a line and had SC, OU, Georgia, LSU, Michigan.
Can you go over that again? So you had Texas, Ohio State, Bama, and who was your number 4?
Penn State was 4, and Notre Dame was 5. Okay. And a bit of that is probably some of my experiences. When we were at Pitt, if you're back in that part of the country, really, and I used to run into Penn State up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And I know they had, this was Paterno and they were rocking and rolling, but particularly in that Pennsylvania area around there, or a lot of places, when the guy with the Penn State sweater walks in the school, you swallow a little bit, Now, that's the same way with Notre Dame, about anywhere in the country, particularly if it's a Catholic school. I mean, if you're recruiting anywhere and the guy walks in with a Notre Dame sweater on, again, you swallow pretty hard. Because it's probably going to be a real tough day. Now, what he's saying is, and I don't disagree, but Georgia being where it is, it's the Atlanta area and all this, and that's good high school football. I can understand all that. The Florida schools speak for themselves by being down there, but I still think I would put Ohio State. I put Alabama in there. And just like in my second, I had OU in number 7, and I know now the geography of the thing, but you go to Texas. But again, he's mentioned this. I probably put a little bit more stock into tradition, selling those things. What do you have to sell,
Tradition has to count for something, right?
It counts for a lot in my experience.
Yeah. History,
at the end of the day, it counts for a lot. So, Michigan's got to fit in there. I'm still seeing the list.
Notre Dame was number 5. Who was 6 for you, Pat?
USC 6, OU 7, And I had Georgia, LSU, Michigan. Michigan is still, I think, to this day, unless Alabama's. I'm looking at a list, how current that is, I'm not sure. Michigan's the winningest program in the country. See, Michigan, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas, OU are the winningest programs in the history of college football. Now, this list might have been made for this year, so I don't know where it got. But you know, you get into this sort of thing. But he's obviously brought up some interesting points, and I understand that side of it. But again, and I guess what I'm saying is it for a while that whoever's been coaching in Texas has fouled it up a bit or can't get it going again for whatever reason.
Why did you have Texas number one, Pat?
Well, I think that Austin is. You've got the state of Texas, which I still think the best high school football in this country is played in the state of Texas. I think it means more in Texas than it did. There's pockets of real good stuff everywhere. You know, there's pockets of good stuff over here. But in Texas, you have it at every stop, essentially. You got it. Texas, you know, Texas is a massive state. That's a massive place down there, and you got more. In high school football means a lot at most places, so they devote a lot to it. So I do. Austin is about the right size town. I haven't been down there in years, but you know, you got 100,000 seat stadium. They've messed around with facilities and probably hadn't stayed up maybe as much as they probably should. But you know, they've got that taken care of. I don't know what really prevents Texas from being Texas. You know, for the Texas of Darryl Royal, and Mac had it going pretty good now with all those years of 10 wins or more that Mac had. Then they won it to one time with Vince Young, but I mean, goodness, he had those runs of 10 win seasons that lasted forever, and all. So I think Texas is the best job, should all be best job in the country.
But it's interesting that you and Urban only agreed on one school in Ohio State. Both of you had Ohio State number
right.
two, but
right.
But really, he didn't have any of your other top five in his top five.
I know.
And you didn't have any of his other top five.
Well, again,
LSU.
I mean, I understand his theory on it that you're close to a lot of guys. But again, if going back to personal experience, I didn't swallow quite as hard when the guy walked in with the Florida State sweater on as I did when the guy with the Notre Dame sweater walked in.
Exactly.
I just didn't. I just didn't.
That has to count for something that tradition, history. Florida State, when Bobby Bowden was there, a lot of people would have had that up in the top five at that time.
But to say
that that's a top five job, I just don't buy that.
Well, I've told you, I can remember going.
Number what? Tied for four.
Yeah.
Again,
I'm older. I can remember going down there. I was an entry-level guy over to Arkansas and went down there to Tallahassee to scout Baylor in 1974. And it was Daryl Mooter was down there, and they had lost 17 in a row, and it was Burt Reynolds' day. And they might have had 22,000 out there in that stadium, Craig. I mean, I can think of it like that. Now, we're all kind of products of what you've experienced, I can remember that part of it.
It's hard for you to put them top five remembering
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.